Kaylin Malachim Aleph. We're in the sixth parak. This is the fourth week learning about the building of the first temple, building of the Beis HaMikdash. Let's begin with Pasuk. Page 58 with Pasuk Chaf Gimel. We saw this a little bit before verse 23. Vayas Badvir Shnei Kruvim Atzi Shamim. So we've been discussing exactly how the Beis HaMikdash was constructed, and in the Dvir, which is the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKodashim, this is what Shlomo built. He built the Kruvim, which were familiar as these cherubs, these golden angel-like figures, that when we usually think of the Kruvim, we think of these cherubs that were placed on top of the Aron, of the Holy Ark. And there's the Aron, and then also about 4 inches thick was a kaparis, a covering, and then were the small cherubs, which were angel-like figures with wings. This was a different set of Kruvim, which were much, much larger, as we're now going to describe. Also, these Kruvim were not all made out of gold. The ones which were on the Aron were all gold. As we're now going to see in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, V'yas b'dvir shnei Kruvim atzi shamen, that he used wood which came from little olives, oil, but it means olive wood was very strong. Eser amos kamasa, and it was very high. 10 cubits was its height. And as we can define an amos, let's call it 2 feet, which is measured from the elbow to the tip of one's middle finger, which is approximately between 18 inches and 24 inches. Let's just call it 2 feet. That would be 20 feet high. That's how large these cherubs were. So enormous. Right? Almost like 4 times the height of man. That's how big were these cherubs. And now the Pesukim continue to describe exactly their dimensions. The Chamish Amos Kanaf HaKruv Achas, the Chamish Amos Kanaf HaKruv Hashenis. That when it came to the wingspan was also enormous. That it was 5 Amos on each direction. Eser Amos Miksos Kanafav, the ad kisos kinafob. So therefore you would have 10 amos from one edge to wing to one wing to the edge of its other wing. So you had a very enormous wingspan of each of them. That's each of them, which of course would be 20 feet. Right. So it's enormous, this wingspan. You can only imagine what this looked like. And the question is that if this is the dimensions of how big these Kruvim were, and this is only defining the wings. And we know in the dimensions of the Kodesh HaKodashim, which we've already discussed, which is also a nice picture on page 51, which is was square, 20 by 20. So if in fact the wingspan was 10 amos each, that's 20 amos.
It couldn't fit in.
That's only the wings. And the question is the body.
But that was just one.
Each one was, 5 and 5, right? Chamesh amos and chamesh amos. So the wings were 5 and 5 each. So therefore, that would
each
be.
Each wing or for each bird or for each.
Each
bird.
Wing. Each wing was 5.
So there
5.
Were 4 wings.
Right, so she would be 20. Which
right,
would,
and, but that's the whole width of the whole.
The whole thing. We take the entire arm. And if you look in the very bottom over here, the last Rashi. The last couple of lines, which quoting Mar Baba Basra, so this is what it says, the very last part of this Rashi, the second last line, Beguf HaKruvim Enu Min Hamida. This is only talking about the wings. The question is, how about the cherubs themselves? So where did that fit? That must have taken up space. So the Talmud says, Be'omid B'nes. It was a miracle. So this is, even though there was a physical space, but since it was such a spiritual place as well, therefore, certain physical things didn't necessarily, we didn't follow the same degrees of requirements of physical space. that's how the Rashi interprets this. That's how it was able to be. It was able to be squished into this area. It was all miraculous. Now, according to, I believe it says it here somewhere in the English, that there's another opinion. I must have underlined that. That's on page 61. It tells us on the top left. It says, quotes what we just said, that the sages explained that the body width of the Kerubim miraculously did not occupy any space of all. But then it says on page 61 in English, before it says 27, in the plain sense of the verse, the Radak comments that the wings were raised upward over their heads before branching outward so that their body widths were under their wingspans. So it's possible that it would. To make it so we don't have to force ourselves to say there's a miracle.
Way, it was like this.
Right, and therefore, but it still covered that entire, from one wall to the next, but the actual cherubs, the actual figures, were underneath the wings. So that's how the Radak addresses that issue.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
What was that nice thing you told us last time about the way the cherubs were facing?
Right. That's okay. One of the things that was, some people explain, is if we look at the Aron, or we can look at the Kruvim themselves, rather, we learn about the importance of the duality of mitzvos, which is not just the mitzvos that pertain to ourselves and Hashem, but also ben adam l'chavero, our relationship to man. And that's the idea that on one hand we're supposed to emulate the ways of these wings that are going upward, and we're supposed to be elevating ourselves continuously, but at the same time you have these two angel-like figures are actually images of people that are facing one another. And the message is that it's not enough for a person to elevate themselves spiritually, but to ignore man. It's necessary to also see eye to eye and to be respectful of people at the same time. You have to do both. They're both necessary. That's the message of the Kruvim.
Nice message.
And I was on Shabbos, we spoke, I don't know if you guys remember, we talked about this strange animal, which has two backs as opposed to two faces. And that's the same message, is that the problem with that animal is that it turns its face from people, or it's kind, or it's not kind to others, to other animals. It's selfish. It turns its back to the world. And the message of the Kruvim is that we're not to turn our faces away from one another. We have to constantly look at others and help others, and to see their perspective and to help others. That's the message. Now, if you look in the Radak says another point which is worthwhile mentioning, and it's also brought down in English on page 59. But the Radak asks the question where it says Atzei Shemen. Now, these are not, it's not made out of olives, the actual oil, but shemen, referring to, as we said, olive wood. So that sounds like a very nice thing to have for these Kruvim. But the Radak asks, the Ein Lishol, this is the third line from the bottom, Eich Shachas Ma'atzi Ma'achel L'tzarech Malacha. How can you chop down good trees in which those trees produce food, right, for olives? Okay, it's letzarech malacha, for you need it for some purpose. You have no right to do it.
And also for the Beit HaMikdash.
It's unbelievable.
Oil.
Not only for the right,
to eat,
right,
you can also,
right. But it's interesting that you can maybe say, well, I mean, this is for the Beit HaMikdash. This is in the Kodesh HaMikdashim. This is the Kruvim, like the holiest thing imaginable. Doesn't matter if there's a halacha, if there's a Torah prohibition, you can't do a certain thing. So you can't look for loopholes around it. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It doesn't matter if you're entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim. If you're doing something which is wrong, it's wrong, and there's no justification for it. So that's the clue what the Radak is asking. So how can we chop down these trees? Yesh lomar, kikaras hazesim hazakenim she'inim osim peros. He's forced to say this. That it must be that these trees, although they used to produce olives, they don't produce them anymore. And therefore, he still wanted these trees, but it was no longer a violation of cutting down these trees. If you look in the English, On page 59, he discusses this issue, and he says that some people say it's not necessarily a tree which is from olives. According to, he says, Y. Felix, it is identified with the common pine tree. Okay, so therefore, that, again, that would address the issue of chopping down fruit-bearing trees. So that's, again, that's another issue that is presented. So let us now continue on the next page, page 60, with more of the descriptions of how these cherubs looked. The Esther Ba'alma HaKruv HaSheni, so 10 Amos, 10 cubits was therefore one of the Kruvim, which Mid Achas V'Ketzav Echad L'Shnei HaKruvim, which means that both of them were exactly the same measure, V'Ketzav Echad, they were cut and designed and formed the exact same, L'Shnei HaKruvim, there's no difference between the two. Komas HaKruv HaEchad Eser Ba'amah, the height of one of them was 10 cubits. V'Chein HaKruv HaSheni, and so too the second Kruv, so they had the same dimensions, the same wingspan, and the same height. Everything was exactly the same. Now, even though this may seem a little bit confusing, but I want to share with you an interesting thing that's actually derived from the Kruvim. In a very indirect way, we learn from the Kruvim the requirement of building a sukkah. Interesting. That the Talmud tells us that when it comes to a sukkah, it has to be a certain height. It cannot be lower than what's called 10 tefachim. A tefach is a hand breadth, which is like the size of a fist, which is about 3 to 4 inches. So if you have a sukkah, it has to be at least, let's say, 40 inches high. And it's actually derived from the Kruvim. And I'm not going to read this whole thing inside, but just to share this idea, he says that when it came to Shlomo Melech building the Beis HaMikdash, the height was 30 amos. That's how high it was. So it's like 60 feet high. You can imagine, very tall. And it said when it came to the Kruvim, which we just read, it said that they were 10 amos high. They were 10 amos high, which means that the Kruvim, the height, was one third of the height of the actual structure of the Beis HaMikdash. So it reached 10 amos, but it continued another 20 amos. So it's a 1-to-3 ratio, if you want to say it that way. So, and it's brought down that the Beis HaMikdash was much larger than the Mishkan, the portable tabernacle which was in the wilderness, but everything was, just like a recipe, exactly the same as far as the dimensions were concerned. Therefore, the Kruvim in the Mishkan also had to be to reach a third of the height of the ceiling. So we know when it came to the Mishkan was much smaller. It was 10 amos. That's how high it was. Because we know that the verse tells us that Eser amos orech ha-koresh, that the planks, that's how high they were, 10 amos, which is 60 cubits. That's 60 tefachim. Now, if that's the case, that means the cherubs themselves had to reach one-third of that, which would be 20 tefachim, or 20 hand breaths. And we also know that the Aron and the Kapares, which you had the Aron, which was 9 cubits, and then there was a covering on top of it, which was 1 cubit, and therefore above that, you had the cherubs, which means that the Kruvim in the Mishkan were exactly 10 tefachim. That's how big it was. That's how it's derived from the Gemara. And above the Kruvim, as we said, were the wings. And it's brought down in the Torah when it discusses the Kruvim, it says that their porsei kunafayim, that these wings spread out, b'mal above them, sochachim b'kanfehim. Interesting language. Sochachim means to cover. It covered them, but it comes from the word tzkach. Exactly. And that's how it's derived, interestingly enough, from all of this, the message of sitting in a sukkah. Obviously, if we think of sitting in a sukkah, which is on some level a very physical structure, but the message clearly is that there is something extremely holy about it, that a person is comparing the sukkah, it's being compared to the actual cherubs, the kruvim in the Kodesh HaKodashim. But that's how it's actually derived, according to one opinion, from the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, that it's necessary that a sukkah has to be at least 60, 10 tefachim high, which is the same size as the cherubs. Okay, which in the Mishkan, which was much smaller, everything was much smaller. Okay, so let's now continue. The pasuk chaf zayin. The yitin es hakruvim besoch habayis hapanimi. So where did he place these kruvim? He put them in the inner chamber, the inner place, which was the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as we discussed, the Holy of Holies. V'yifrasu as kanfei hakruvim, v'tiga kanaf echad bekir, v'kanaf hakruv hasheni, nogas bekir hasheni. So he had the wings of the kruvim spread out, and one of the wings was touching a kir, one of the walls, v'kanaf hakruv hasheni, and the other kruv, this other cherub, this also is touching the other side of the wall. With kanfeim el tochabais, and the wings of the inner wings of these two kruvim were with inside. There were nogas kanaf el kanaf; they were touching one another. So, because as we said, it's exactly 20 amos, the whole inside of the Kodesh Kedoshim, and each of the kruvim, its wings were 10. So it stands to reason that the edge of the wings was touching the walls, and that the other edge of their wings were touching one another, because it took up the exact amount of space that fit perfectly in that space. And therefore, that's how he situated and placed the kruvim exactly as that in that way.
Would but, there still be golden kruvim on the Aron, or this was instead of?
There were also. This was instead of. Yeah.
No, this is instead of or also?
This is also. Yes. Absolutely. Right. Okay. Now, right now it's just made out of wood. But now Pasuk HaKas tells us the Etzaf Es HaKruvim Zahav, that he took the wood and he covered it up with gold. So, and we're going to see now the rest of the Beis HaMikdash, how he covers everything up with gold. But it's explained.
So these olive wood or cedar wood,
yeah,
proven were then covered with gold?
Yes. Uh-huh. Right. Exactly. So they
as opposed to the other proven, which were solid
just
gold?
Gold. Right. All gold. Uh-huh. Right. If you look at, going back just to, as you was talking about before, on page 59, where it says the cherubim, in English, says God commanded Moshe to build the Aron, which would house the luchos, everything. Upon the ark, he put a solid gold cover, which was he then fashioned two gold cherubim. They were angel-like figures, similar to those in the prophetic visions of Isaiah and Ezekiel. Okay, Moses' two cherubim had the faces of children, and they faced one another. They had wings that stretched upward and covered the ark, and they were only 10 handbreadths high, a bit under about 40 inches. And they said Solomon added two more cherubim, which were different from those of Moshe in several ways. So as we said, they were made out of wood, and he covered them up with gold. They were much higher, right? 10 amos, almost 20 feet high. And they stood on the floor, as opposed to it being on the top of the Aron, which is what the smaller cherubs that Moshe made, that's where they were. So they're in addition to.
But in the Beit HaMikdash, is he going to still build all gold kruvim that are going to sit on top of the Aron?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're comparing apples and oranges here. Because they're comparing the gold kruvim that was sitting in the Mishkan,
right,
with these big ones that
right.
are
right. But the idea is that one shouldn't think they're the same thing. They're not. That's the message. They're different. They're very different. They're
but
both kruvim. They both have similar.
Uh-huh.
Maybe the dimension. They're smaller. Obviously, but it's the same. The same. They may look very similar, but one's much smaller than the other. It's brought down, as since we just saw the English, when it says Ezekiel chapter 1, that's referring to one of the most difficult sections of mysticism, which is called Masa Markava, which is a discussion of a vision that Ezekiel saw. And one of the things that is discussed is the likeness of God, even though God has no physical form, but it discusses on his throne, we were just learning this on Shabbos in the second chapter of Chagig, which discusses all these intricate details of God's throne, his holy throne, says that there were four corners of his throne. And on each of those corners, there were different images. Of course, everything is spiritual, but on one was a picture of a calf or an ox. Another one was an eagle. Another one was a lion. Another one is the face of a person. So that those four represent the four powers of the world. That you have an eagle, which is the king of birds. The lion is the king of beasts, and right. And then you have this calf or ox, which is of the domesticated animals. And then you have man that is above all of them. And then you have Hashem, which is above all of that. And it's brought down that in the days of Yechezkel, he prayed to have one of them removed, namely the one of the ox or the calf, because it would remind God too much of the sin of the golden calf. And what he did was he put instead a face of a child. So you had you have two people instead. And whatever the symbolism is of that, interesting to think about why he changed that face, but the idea of the Kruvim is on some level to mirror what it looks like in God's holy throne, this Kisei HaKavod. And the focus is that you have the two people, that even though man is above everything else, but nonetheless, in the circles of Hashem, we're obviously much, much less. But that's the image of these faces of these people looking at one another represents the part of the throne of God. So obviously it's a much more exactly what that means, but that's how sometimes some explain it. So let's just see a couple more pesukim here on Pasuk Chaf Tes on page 60. V'yizkol kiros habayis metzav kola pituche mikvaos keruvim. So he says that when it came to all the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, it was pituche is chakika, was engraved and was put all around these designs of Kruvim. So it wasn't just that the Kruvim, these figures, were only found in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, on the cherubs themselves, but there were pictures of their likeness all around, as well as the Simrois, which Mesudas Sion says, Siori Iloni Tamar, which were pictures of trees, or date trees. Baturi Tzitzim, which are blossoming flowers. Milifnim V'lachitzai, from the inside and the outside. So in the Kodesh Kodashim, in the Kodesh, all around the walls were designed with beautiful pictures of flowers that were budding, and trees, and faces of little children. All of them have to do with being, I don't want to say the word reborn, but starting anew, starting fresh. The purpose of going to the Beis HaMikdash was a person who made mistakes, who had errors, that they should feel they have an always an opportunity, just like a blossoming flower, just like that tree, just like that little child, which is on the face of the care of the cherubim, that they could go back to that age of innocence, the time which they could reconnect to Hashem before they sinned, that they shouldn't feel it's too late. The purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is to reconnect yourself to Hashem. That's the reason why you have all these external stimuli of all these pictures around you to be able to give you that feeling.
But it was a face of a child, but aren't you supposed to reproduce?
Prohibited
to reproduce
the human
figure?
So that itself is a question, how could we have Moshe himself made these images, which clearly is against the... Absolutely. The only reason why... Some people say, like this, that the truth is the Torah says you're not supposed to make these, like, molten images, but God himself said you're supposed to do it. So since Hashem said you're allowed to do it, that's why it's allowed to be done. And therefore, by making it in a way, it's the idea gives a message of what idol worship is all about. One of the issues that people have when it comes to religion is that, where's God? I don't see God. It's intangible. It's not something which is, I can touch, I can see, I can feel, so it doesn't exist. One of the reasons why people like an idol is because they can actually see something and connect to it. And therefore, some explained the whole mistake of the golden calf was that they needed something to be able to connect to.
That's because Moshe was...
Moshe left. So Moshe was that vehicle, right. That medium. Once he left, they needed something else. And their mistake was, Moshe is not an idol, so he was inspired. But you need something
tangible to connect to Hashem.
So which Hashem is actually showing us by having those Kruvim, understands that that's the nature of a person, that you need to see something. You need something tangible in front of you to give you some form of inspiration. But the point is that it has to be done properly, which is Hashem has to tell you that it's allowed. If Hashem says you're not allowed to do it, you're not allowed to do it. But Hashem, being sensitive, understanding that that's something which we really needed, put it, not only allowed it, but put it in the holiest place in the world, in the Kodesh Kodashim. So it gives you an understanding of how idol worship makes a little bit of sense, why people need that actual thing to see.
But also, these weren't really children. These were images of children with wings. They weren't like human. It wasn't a human form, really.
But not all idols have human forms. You know, the idols have all kinds
of forms. No, but we're not supposed to have pictures of humans, like, we're not supposed to keep in our homes statues of people. You could have a statue of a horse in your house. I think you are.
I don't have any.
Well, I
but that's how some people explain it. And in itself is an interesting question, but Hashem allows it, and there's a reason why Hashem must allow it, because it's something which we really do need on some level. Let's just see this last pasuk, and then next week we'll talk about the Doors, not the rock band. That's karka bayasipa zahav, and the ground also, the floor, also, he covered up with gold. So clearly he spared no expense. Inside and out was gold. And again, we'll discuss more about the building of the Beis HaMikdash next time.